Hi, this is Nancy Clare, and welcome to episode 12 of Speaking of Mysteries. This week's guest is Paul Dworon, author of the Mike Bowditch series of mysteries that are set in rural Maine, which, after speaking to Paul, I understand is most of the state referred to as the Attic of America because of its remote northeastern location. For the most part, popular culture associates the intersection of mysteries and the state of Maine with Murder, She Wrote, you know, the circa 80s episodic TV series that featured the quite brilliant Angela Lansbury as a bicycle-riding Miss Marple-esque mystery writer in a fictional Maine seaside hamlet surrounded by quirky but good-natured friends and neighbors. That is not the Maine of Paul Dworon's series. The state of Maine is a fascinating place. Two Maines, Paul points out, by population the most rural, the oldest, and the whitest state in the U.S., and a natural backdrop for tension between rural, suburban, economic determinism, and ecological fervor. After the official interview was over, Paul and I chatted for a few minutes, and he told me that the series was well-read in the Northeast, in St. Louis. But much like other series that feature other rural central characters, wilderness characters, C.J. Box's Joe Pickett and Nevada Barr's Anna Pigeon, both of whom he's frequently compared to, I think the Mike Bowditch series, the fifth of which is The Bone Orchard and due out in mid-July, should have a broad appeal. If you haven't read any of Paul's series, I encourage you to do so. Now, here's Paul Dworon. Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. This week, we have from Maine, Paul Dworon, and he will correct me if I have mispronounced his last name, who writes the Mike Bowditch series of mysteries set in the Northwoods of Maine, mostly in the Northwoods of Maine. So, welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
And I think I'm going to jump right into it. You know, for most of popular culture associates Maine and mysteries with the episodic TV show Murder, She Wrote. And I think that the Mike Bowditch series, and I've read two, Massacre Pond and the most recent, The Bone Orchard, are about as far from Murder, She Wrote as you can possibly get and be in the same universe.
Yes, I would also, I used to edit a magazine called Down East, the Magazine of Maine, which is sort of the official, it's a privately owned publication, but it's kind of the signature publication of Maine, and it's a very optimistic, you know, positive magazine, and I once wrote an article called Where's Cabot Cove, because the state tourism office, even to this day, gets inquiries from tourists who want to visit Cabot Cove. And, of course, it's actually a small town in California where all this was filmed. It wasn't even filmed in Maine.
Well, it's actually it's actually at the back lot at Universal Studios. So it's
closer, yeah, exactly.
It's closer to me than it is to you in Los Angeles.
Certainly the accents were about as far from real Maine accents as one could possibly encounter, But no, I mean, you know, editing Down East, we profiled businesses and, you know, important people and, you know, wrote about communities. And as I say, it is not a Pollyannish magazine by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, it always has taken the view that Maine is a really, you know, good place and tries to shine a pretty positive light on it. And I found that in my spare time, I had an overwhelming urge to write about everything that I could not possibly put into the magazine. That's one of the reasons that I began writing the series, was that I'm a Maine native and I knew, you know, all of these dark corners and dark secrets about Maine. And so, I have to find some way to get those out. So
I think you do a really good job striking a balance between sort of the romantic Maine that you've just described, and you know, the Maine of the imagination of the rest of the country, and the reality of a large rural state that's in transition.
Yeah, New Orleans is an unusual place because it's the most heavily forested state in the nation, which always surprises people. It's the most rural state in the nation if you sort of define the way that population is spread out over a landscape. We are the oldest state in the nation demographically in terms of our median age, and we are also the whitest state in the nation. And of course, here we're tucked up in the northeast corner of the United States, so you know we're not on the road to anywhere but Canada, and most people don't really come this way to go to Canada. So it really does have this feeling of being, you know, America's attic, and the mystique I think is real. It's, you know, it's drop dead gorgeous, and the people are great, and there's a lot of rich history here. You know, there's a reason why so many people want a vacation here, so many people want second homes here. But, you know, it also is the northern end of Appalachia, and, you know, there are pockets of poverty here that, you know, rival anything you find in, you know, West Virginia or Kentucky, and they're just not seen by tourists.
As a backdrop for the story, Mike Bowditch's the mysteries that he solves, and he's a smart young guy, and we'll get to him in a second. But a lot of the times in the stories, there seems to be a very distinct conflict between the environmentalists, both inside and outside of the state, and the economic realities that other residents feel. And that shows up in the crimes that happen. And do you think that's a pretty accurate representation of the push and the pull that's going on right now?
Yeah, I try to have my mysteries be topical without being, sort of ripped from the headlines and the television sense. And a lot of the issues that are occupying Mainers are things like, there's a proposal to create a Northwoods National Park in Maine, and it's incredibly controversial because Maine has largely had an extractive economy in terms of our wood products industry, and you know many people are still holding on to fantasies that the old paper mill jobs are going to come back. You know, at least to pay $80,000 a year, whatever. And those mills have all closed down for the most part. And there's real skepticism here, too. I mean, we have a Tea Party governor, so there's a bit of the, you know, the fear of the federal government or, you know, resentment of it. But you know, it seems as though a lot of the issues that get the most ink and sort of generate the most conversation are things like that park. There's a big debate going on about access to Maine's beaches. Maine has a law that limits public access to beaches. I think we actually have the highest amount of our, you know, total land in private ownership of any state in the nation. There's very little public land in Maine, and very little federal land especially. So, you know, because it's a rural state, because it's a forested state, you know, Mainers are living close to nature, and so I think these issues tend to have a bit more life to them than, you know, than in other states that are dealing with more urban problems, frankly, and, you know, or problems with immigration or social services or that sort of thing.
Well, in the two stories that I've read, there are a lot of guns. And is it safe to say that Maine is maybe the most gun-centric state in New England?
I don't know if it's the most gun-centric state in New England. You know, it sort of depends on how you look at guns. I mean, obviously the culture around guns has changed a lot, even in the last 10 years. And I think that Maine has always had almost that old-fashioned ethos around guns where, you know, you hear stories about how 30 years ago, you know, a high school kid could bring his hunting rifle to school and leave it in his locker, you know, because he was going to go hunting before class or whatever. And we have very little violence in Maine. I mean, that's the other irony of this thing is, you know, here's Murder, She Wrote, and, you know, in which there's a murder of the week. And of course, we're the birthplace of Stephen King. And so, you know, that's the other sort of strange thing about Maine is that I think it's thought of as being kind of a haunted, scary, you know, slightly dangerous place. But in fact, in reality, it's quite safe. And, you know, and most of the gun violence that we have is unfortunately, you know, domestic violence kinds of occurrences. But Mainers don't, I don't think, fetishize guns particularly. I think that guns are sort of seen as just being the kind of thing that, you know, a family would own a gun to go hunting. And it's not a lot of the controversy that you see raging elsewhere, especially in New England, is being manifested here at all. It just does not exist.
Mike Bowditch is a very interesting character, and he does a lot of self-examination that he identifies with the people in the North Woods, and yet he spent most of his upbringing in the suburbs. And do you think that that represents sort of the conflict that some of the people in Maine have between their perception of themselves as you said, an incredibly rural white state, and the growth of the suburbs that are taking place?
Yeah, I created, you know, Mike's background deliberately to manifest a phenomenon which we talk about in Maine as the two Maines, which is that there's this coastal Maine, which is very affluent for the most part. And a lot of it is looks south towards Boston, for instance. It's where people tend to move from out of state when they settle here. And then you have inland Maine and northern Maine, where people are desperate sometimes to get out of there when they're high school age. And you do have, you know, it used to be that you could live in a lot of those communities and make really good livings working in paper mills if you didn't come down with cancer. But there's a political divide in the state between these two Maines. And, you know, I wasn't overly conscious, I think, when I was creating Mike, of having a kind of creating a thematic character. He sort of just happened. But later, after I did, you know, write him and came up with this background for him, I sort of stepped back myself and I said, what have I done here? And I realized that I had somehow created a character that did embody this internal conflict that the state has. And it's actually getting worse in the sense that the area around Portland, which is our largest city, which is, you know, by most measures, it's not much of a city, but it's an incredibly livable place, and it has great restaurants, and it's becoming more and more cosmopolitan and connected to the megalopolis that, you know, sort of used to end at Boston, and it now stretches up into the greater Portland suburbs. And so you have a lot of people there, and they're in Maine, but not out of Maine. And so you have a great deal of conflict, you know, especially on political issues. There's a measure on the ballot in November that will ban bear hunting, essentially, as we know it in Maine. And, you know, there couldn't be a subject that is sort of separates the two Maines more than that.
Do you think Mike Bowditch, so he's both an outsider and an insider. He straddles, as you describe him, the two Maines. He's an educated young man who feels most at home in a place where people are not as highly educated, and he sort of takes guff for it. And so anyway, my question is: would Mike Bowditch find his fellow characters like Joe Pickett and Anna Pigeon and even Alex McKnight, would they be kindred spirits?
I think to some degree. To some degree they would, yeah, absolutely. I'm friends with PJ Box, and of course, you know, it's inevitable since I've kind of come along after those writers that I get compared to them quite a lot. And I've told Chuck Box that I can't really read him anymore because I don't want to be influenced by him. But, you know, I think Joe is more, for instance, Joe Pickett is more, a lot. He's a highly intelligent man, and he's very much his own man. But he's very much a person, you know, of his environment too. I mean, he feels to me like a, you know, modern cowboy in a lot of ways. Alex, I think, is a character that is, you know, he's very much of a transplant. I mean, he's a Detroit cop who ends up in UP, and then Anna Pigeon is kind of a, you know, she's a wandering spirit. I mean, she you know, every place she goes, she sort of belongs and doesn't belong. So I think in that regard, they're all a little bit outsiders. I mean, Joe Pickett, I think his sort of brand of being an outsider is that he has this self-awareness that puts him in conflict with characters who he identifies with maybe at a cultural level, but not at a political level or a moral level.
Well, what struck me about all of them is they all have to deal with the sort of the impersonal nature of nature, what nature has wrought, which is not personal, and what man has wrought, which usually is. And they have to make the differentiation between the two. And it seems that Mike Bowditch has a pretty good handle on you know, nature's, on how impartial nature is, and how malevolent man can be. So do you think that's an accurate description of him?
Yeah, definitely. There are a couple of things that motivate me to write about this specific character. You know, one of them is that we are becoming an increasingly urbanized society and an increasingly urbanized world, and so you have a growing detachment, I think, everywhere between people and the natural world. And it comes out in different ways. In terms of, you know, people not knowing where their food is really coming from, or being blind to the sorts of, you know, natural disaster catastrophes. They just, you know, we sort of just think that we can kind of build our cities in such a way that Katrina will never happen to us. And so, you know, that's an aspect of the stories, is that Mike is somebody who understands the danger of humankind losing its connection to nature, losing its understanding of the impartiality of nature. The other aspect of his character is that in Maine, game wardens are full law enforcement officers. They go to the Criminal Justice Academy, and they have all of the powers of a state trooper and additional powers, in fact. And so they are very much the off-road police. That's the slogan that they used to advertise themselves. And, you know, the reality in Maine is that almost everywhere is off-road. So at one point in one of the books, I talk about how, you know, Mike is sort of thinking about that so many people think that what he does has to do with animals. And, you know, it does in a general sense, but really what it has to do with is people. And as he says, it really has to do with what people do when no one is looking at them. Because that's, you know, that's the nature of being in the woods. It's your, you know, there's nobody there to call the cops on you, you know, if you decide that you want to go on a shooting spree and you know, slaughter 9 or 10 or 12 moose for no good reason, which is something that happens in the books and was based on a real incident.
Well, I mean, I think there is, for the rest of us that are not residents of Maine, there is a learning curve about game wardens. And I found that interesting. And I found that interesting that they were law enforcement and not park rangers. There really is a big difference between the two. Like you said, they're looking for crime. Do you think from your reaction from your readers, has that been surprising to readers outside of the state?
Well, I find that I have to explain it in each book anew. You know, because it is such a widely misunderstood aspect to the warden's job. In Maine, as I've written some somewhere else, is that, because it's a really rural state, we have not a lot of crime, not a lot of violent crime. We have lots of property crime, but because the police are so thinly scattered across the landscape, it's often the case that something will happen. Somebody will, there'll be a car, a crash, or something. A building will burn down or whatever. And somebody calls 911 and the closest responding officer in Maine very often happens to be the game warden. So game wardens are drawn into, literally every kind of crime imaginable. And it was one of the reasons why I wanted to make my main character a game warden was that I felt that for one thing, it would allow me to write about the state in a way that was unique. But also, I realized that in terms of plotting, it gave me a lot of latitude because I can bring Mike into all kinds of different sorts of investigations that that somebody might not really realize that a game warden would be part of.
Well, let's talk a little bit about specifically about the Bone Orchard, which is going to the publication date is July 15th, and in that, for Mike is not a game warden. He has resigned, and part of his internal conflict is has to do with that very thing, And there's one scene when he's taking a couple fishing, and some guys get in his face, and he instinctively reaches for the gun that he used to wear on his hip, and it's no longer there. So, do you want to talk about a little bit about why he has to spend some time in the wilderness, literally and figuratively?
Yeah, it really goes back to the very first book in the series, The Poacher's Son. And in that book, it's the case where Mike has decided that he's going to join the warden service because his father is, he's a poacher in the North Woods. He's sort of this larger-than-life, hyper-masculine, barroom brawler and, womanizer and hard drinker and backwoods lawbreaker. And Mike is estranged from his father and, he both resents him but also, craves his approval and respect. And, his attitude essentially is, you don't think I'm man enough, well, I'll show you I'm going to become a game warden. You're sort of your natural enemy, which is exactly the wrong reason to become a law enforcement officer, out of some kind of a psychological flaw. It's the source, I think, of a lot of his issues through the early books, which is that he's not a great fit for the warden service. He's very intelligent. He loves the North Woods. He knows it very well. He knows every aspect of it very well. He's very brave. He's very big-hearted. But he doesn't have commitment to following orders. He's very independent-minded, and he has a hard time sort of putting aside his own ideas in order to sort of, be a good soldier and just do what he's ordered to do. And this causes him all kinds of problems, and it also leads to a lot of my readers being very frustrated by him because he makes so many mistakes, but it's all deliberate on my part, I wanted to write about that kind of a character. I wanted to write that character who's very flawed and damaged and becomes more integrated, becomes more heroic over the course of the series. By the time you get to the Bone Orchard, what's happened is that Mike has come to realize this. He's realized that, hey, I joined this service for the wrong reasons, and I don't belong. People have been telling me this for a long time, and you know, I've been fighting them on it because they don't want to admit they're right, but I'm just going to walk away from this. And yeah, essentially the drama of the book is him realizing all the consequences of this, and also realizing that he was a better law enforcement officer than he ever gave himself credit for, and certainly than his superiors ever gave him credit for. So he's now in the position of having to, he regrets his decision to a great degree, and you know, he's really is. It's sort of a coming full circle book in some extent, where he's sort of back to having to decide whether or not maybe he really should be a game warden, and he's certainly feeling the loss, I think, of that authority that he had. I mean, the scene that he described, I mean, I think that sums it up pretty well.
Are you working on the next? Are you working on number six?
I am. Yes, I have my contract is for two more books in the series, at least. You know, I hope that there will be more than that. It's, you know, what's interesting about it, the process for me, is that I really have approached it as a saga. You know, the books, I hope, for the most part, can be read as standalone mysteries, but you lose a lot not knowing the history of the character. But, you know, I begin every book in terms of my, you know, my thinking about it, my planning about it, with the question, you know, where is Mike in this book in terms of his development as a law enforcement officer, but more importantly as a man. And, you know, it's as if I am writing a biography of a character. So, you know, there's a lot of change from book to book in terms of his growth. And I think that, you know, in terms of the mail I get, I find that people really identify with that part of the series, that they like the fact that he's flawed. I mean, you know, they get annoyed with him when he makes mistakes, but any writer will tell you that if you can provoke an emotional reaction in your reader that's that personal, you know, it means that you've touched some kind of a nerve, and so you're succeeding at some level in terms of what you're doing and creating a character that feels almost three-dimensional, like somebody that you might meet and you know, how to chastise or whatever it is. So, that's the challenge for book six, is to say, okay, well, you know, he's settled a few different things in the Bull Nurture, but so now what's the thing that's unresolved still? And of course I want to have him growing and developing and not be static. So it's always sort of a different challenge.
Did you think of the series in terms of an overall arc? I know you just mentioned that each story is an individual and can be a standalone.
I try to make each story sort of, you know, satisfying on its own, because you never know which book somebody's going to pick up and what the order they're going to read them. Years ago when I was sort of thinking of this series, I said to myself, okay, there's going to be 12 books, and each book is going to take place in a different month of the year, because a game warden's job changes from month to month. You know, November, for instance, is deer season. It's all about that. Whereas, say, February might be all about enforcing snowmobile laws, you know, or May may be fishing or turkey hunting or whatever it is. Whether, you know, actually I have the opportunity to write 12 books remains to be seen, but I have in my mind sort of where, when the series wraps up, whenever it wraps up, I know kind of where I want Mike to be as a character.
Well, thank you very much, Paul, for joining us and talking about Mike and We look forward to reading The Bone Orchard, which really is a stellar book on every level.
Oh, thank you.
And the next one, and the next one. And hopefully you'll join us again. Hopefully we'll be around and you'll be able to join us again. Anyway, thank you again.
Well, thank you. This has been great. I've really enjoyed it.
Speaking of Mysteries is lining up its next interviews. My partner, Les Klinger, who recently succeeded in his court case to free the character of Sherlock Holmes, and I are going to be speaking to first-time thriller writer Matt Cook about Sabotage. And we have interviews planned with Julia Keller, whose Summer of the Dead is scheduled for release in August, and Jenny Milchman, who is currently on her book tour for the riveting Ruin Falls. Until next week, this is Nancy Clare for Speaking of Mysteries.